The Bulldogs Extra Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's. Cure your cravings. Stop in today or visit Zaxby's.com.
From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports. From the Athens Banner-Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Hey, everyone. Welcome into the podcast. It's Thursday morning, bright and early as we record this, so we can get up a special podcast interview with one Vince Dooley. It's Mark Weiser, UGA beat writer for the Athens Banner-Herald, with Ryan Dennis, sports editor. And, yep, today we are going to have former Georgia coach Vince Dooley on 2 days ahead of the dedication of Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium. We'll talk to him about his career at Georgia, his thoughts on Kirby Smart and the Bulldogs football program. And after that, we'll get to our weekly picks. And Arthur Lynch is going to be joining us, the former Georgia tight end. Not on the podcast today. He'll be doing his picks, which you can pick up in the game day section. And you might want to pick it up anyway. It's a special section with Coach Dooley on the cover. And we'll also get into our over-unders for Saturday's game. Ryan, what's bigger this weekend, the pregame activities or the actual game? Have I mentioned the opponent? It's the Murray State Racers coming to town.
Yeah, it's a huge moment for Coach Dooley and his family. I agree with that. But I mean, that, any time Georgia's on the football field, that's a big game. I mean, you know, it's gonna be a happy celebration before and all. But I think once that's over, then it's time to focus on football. Like, I mean, what is a kid coming to the game gonna remember? He's gonna remember the game, not Dooley Field ceremony. But it'll be a special moment. But I say the game is a little more important. The ceremony before is definitely special and one I'm sure we won't forget, but at this, when it comes down to football, every game's important. Isn't that right, Coach?
You know what? It's the home opener. That's going to be exciting. People are going to be out tailgating all day. It's going to be really hot. It's not a big game, Ryan. I don't know what you're talking about. It's an FCS program that, you know, not even a top 25 FCS program. All respect to them. I think they're going to come in and play hard.
It's not basketball, is it?
They'd come in and play hard, but this is a team that beat up on an NAIA team in a Thursday night game a week ago. Did you know they have a horse named Racer that runs around the track at home games?
No, does it? I bet it's not as wild as Beaver. I bet it doesn't come after.
Yeah, I don't think. I would guess that they're not going to bring a horse into Sanford Stadium.
Let's say that they played in the Sugar Bowl against Georgia. I bet Racer does not come after.
You're saying Murray State's going to make the Sugar Bowl?
Yeah.
UCF can't get in.
Power five.
UCF can't get into. Well, I guess they could get in, you know.
I didn't know that there was a horse named Racer.
I want them to bring the horse to the Specktowns track, and I want Matthew Bowling to give him a showdown.
Did I read a story about this back in the day? Some history that maybe a Native American raced a horse or something like that. I bet Matthew could give him a run for his money, though, that racer.
All right, some news in the last 15 hours-ish, yeah. I guess. Isaiah Wilson, Georgia's starting right tackle, went down with an injury in practice on Wednesday. Of course, Georgia and Kirby Smart haven't confirmed it. I was told it looks like a sprained ankle. There have been other reports to the same out there. Look, this is a costly injury. It's not costly this week or next week if he has to be out both those games, but especially in 2 weeks against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, who presumably will come in with a better performance than they did against Louisville on Monday. Ryan, what do you think Georgia's going to do? I think for all the talk about Georgia's great offensive line,
yeah,
they're not looking as deep as you would think, given the fact that I guess they played really... was it just six guys until the game got out of hand?
Sounds right, yeah. I didn't keep track of that like I might should have, but I mean, only when Isaiah was injured, they moved.
They brought Ben Cleveland played a good, I think he played like five series. But, you know, I would guess Cade Mays, who stepped in, I think, for, you know, a few snaps. I don't know exactly
how long it was. Yeah, I think that's what they moved in before Isaiah came back. Maybe right, two, three.
I don't even know exactly what Isaiah's deal was, what he went out with.
I just saw him hobbling off.
Yeah.
Maybe it was, you know, hurting him before. I don't know. I mean, that's an assumption, but.
Yeah, Jamari Sawyer looks like he's going to be back. He's been at practice this week, and Kirby was saying, Something to the effect of, you know, the way he's looking out there, I was wondering, you know, where he was at the end of last week in terms of how he kind of got much better faster, I guess. So that'll give you another option there as well.
Is this a time where you pull out who came in? Xavier Truss, you know, Warren McClendon?
Well, especially considering that you can play guys
four games.
And this is the kind of game where you're going to see those guys. The guys that are going to redshirt are going to be playing in this game. So I think every freshman that's available will play this game, presumably.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, but do they get more playing time, I guess, than expected? You know.
Yeah, I mean, you could have. Yeah, these. I mean, I don't know if Xavier Truss is going to play more than a series or two at the most.
Yeah.
If even, but certainly some other backups. You know.
Well, what was the news? I mean, do we know what's wrong with Clay Webb? I mean, it said he was ill, but
Kirby says he
seems fishy to me.
He has a sickness. What? Okay. What are you saying?
No, I'm just.
Are you not believing? I
don't think he has
a
head cold. Is what I'm saying. I mean, you don't miss practice time with a head cold. It just he gave a quick answer, said he was fighting illness or something, and then moved on. I don't know. So it'd be interesting to know more about what's wrong with Clay Webb. Was he 5-star Alabama kid out of Alabama?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who we might see on the offensive line. Who's Natori Johnson's teammate from high school?
Yeah, the lineman. Schaefer? Does that sound
right? Yeah, there we go. I was drawing a blank. Justin Schaefer is a guy in particular.
Yeah.
I would expect to see a good bit in a game like this.
He actually filled in last year when Ben went down, right? A little bit at guard. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we will have Vince Dooley right here in studio.
Excited. Excited about that.
And this is Mark Weiser along with Ryan Dennis from the Athens Banner-Herald and Online Athens. And this is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. All right, we are pleased and happy to be joined by legendary Georgia football coach and former athletic director Vince Dooley, who is joining us on what's certainly a big week for him, and we appreciate you being with us, Coach.
Well, glad to be here. It is an unusual week for me in a weekend, but I'm looking forward to it.
All right, let me just start by asking you about the reason for all the excitement this weekend with the new name for Georgia's stadium in terms of the name Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium. Have you got used to hearing that by now?
No, I have not. I really have not. I understand that there'll be some designation in the stadium of that. So I don't know where or what it is, but I'll be looking forward to knowing. And in fact, in most cases, I don't know anything that's going on otherwise other than report at a certain time, which is 3:15 before the game to go out. And they're having some dedication before the game. And the only thing I know is that the captains, I understand, are going to be there surrounding the G. So that's the extent of my knowledge, but I know I can't go wrong, that's for sure. It's not like going into a ball game where you don't know whether you're going to win or lose. I think that in this case, we'll come out all right.
Well, I'm sure that'll certainly be special for you. But, you know, you've had many honors, of course, College Football Hall of Fame and everything. Where does this rank, you know, having the field named after you?
Well, it kind of, whatever's last kind of is, you know, something that's extra special. And this one is extra special because it involves so many people. It's primarily the players who made it happen. I mean, I wouldn't be out there on Saturday if it wasn't for them and their coaches and then my family. It means a lot to them for generations to come. And there's just a lot of people, a lot of the great fans that wear the red and black and Bulldog Nation. And a lot of them will take pride in it. So it's just extraordinarily special in that respect.
1964, of course, was your first season at Georgia. When was the first time you stepped into that stadium, and what were your impressions of it?
Well, I felt like it needed some work, but that wasn't my main focus. My main focus when I came was the football team, to get a staff to recruit and then to coach these players that we inherited, a bunch of guys that were hungry as they could be, that had gone through some difficult times. And the only facility priority that I had was to have an athletic dorm. Back in those days, you had to Bear Bryant Hilton over in Alabama, and Auburn had a dormitory. And so in order to compete at all, you had to have an athletic dorm, and Georgia didn't have one. They had one, I think, 3 years previously, but because of some problems they had with it, it wouldn't run very well. The discipline was a little lax. And so they got rid of one and said they'll never have one again. So I had to do a heck of a job of recruiting and to kind of convincing them that that if they would give us an opportunity to have one, it'll be run the way it should be run. So that was the only main focus I had when I first came 55 years ago.
Was that the original McWhorter Hall and all that was built?
Yeah,
because
yeah. Ended up the... it took us, I think, 3 or 4 years before they finally built it. But there was a tractor-looking thing that was sitting up on the land. So when we had recruits coming in, we would tell them about that we're going to build this dorm. And I said, and that's the site. And I said, look, there's a tractor already up there. I didn't say what the tractor was doing, but and it wasn't constructing anything. It was just there. But it gave the impression that we were well on the way to building the dorm.
Well, I'm sure you've seen the stadium grow, Sanford Stadium. You know, what input did you have on a lot of the improvements to Sanford over the years? And, you know, I guess skyboxes came in since your time and all that, and new scoreboards. You know, what type of input did you have to get all that
done? I had a lot of input, yeah. Primarily responsible for it. Actually, the stadium, the site of the stadium is beautiful in that Tanyard Creek. So from that standpoint, it was great when I first came. But there was some patching done. There was some bleachers in one spot, and it really didn't conform to the stadium. So I was determined that any addition that we made, that it was going to be in conformity with the stadium. And I'm very proud of the fact that if you look at it now, it looks like it was all one stadium built. And I'm very proud of that. But the worst thing was these lights that were in the stadium where you had poles. And I was at Auburn scouting Georgia. And then when we'd get to the film, you'd have to kind of figure out a way to look around the pole because it was hiding two or three players you were trying to scout. So the first thing we did was to get rid of those terrible-looking light poles, and we actually brought them over to the practice field and used them there for probably 20 years. But then we finally put in some real lights in 1980.
What would you say is your best memory in Sanford Stadium?
Oh, well, I don't know. There's a lot of memories. Finally winning the first game, probably winning the last game, and then some of the excitement in between. We had a good, great run in the 80s where we won every conference game during that four-year period except the last one, like 24 or 25 in a row. So that was a great run. And being in between the hedges is really special. Just a lot of great memories. Some not so good, I might add, too. And I'm going to try to bring those up, but always the good ones.
Well, I'll be the bad guy to ask you, you know, what are some of the bad times in there, you know, that you tried to forget?
Well, beat was bad. That was really bad. And it was... you know, when you get beat and you feel like you played good, you don't feel near as bad. You still feel bad. But then when you don't feel like you did a good enough job. But then you would have a recommitment and a rededication and the fact that maybe you didn't coach as well, you didn't prepare the team as well. Those are the regrets that live with you a long time.
I think I've seen a lot of like engagement photos from people, somebody that popped the question on the turf in Sanford Stadium or something like that, or even weddings that have gone on in the stadium there. Have you been to any events like that? Has anyone invited you? And I'm sure beyond football games that people have a special place for the stadium that they want it to be part of their special memories, the things that go on in their lives.
Well, it is been very important to a lot of people. You're right. The band did have some weddings there. I did not participate. I was always in the locker room at halftime. We had a lot of changing of the dogs. And the first changing of the dog, it took place in 1966. And I have been through all of the 10 Uggas. Ugga 1, when I came, was 6 months, 6 years old. And then in 1966, we changed to Ugga 2, and it was a ceremony at halftime. And Charles Seiler, who handles the dogs now in place of Sonny, was about 5 or 6 years old. I can still see him now with little shorts on going out there with Ugga 2. And then I participated in that after I gave up coaching myself. So that was special. And I used to be able not to see the halftime show during the games, but I did see them because every season before we started on Thursday night, I would come out and the band would put on a rehearsal for me, because it would be the only time that I would really see what the band was doing at halftime. And it was always a special moment. And afterwards, I would then come down and visit with them and let them know how important they are to the spirit of Georgia football. And that was, and I still see band members today that remind me of that, and it was a special time.
Going back to Ugga, I guess you agree with Sports Illustrated's assessment that he's the number one mascot of all time?
Without a doubt. That's the highest compliment. I did send Sonny a congratulatory email to him and his late wife, Cecilia, who did so much work with the dogs and all of the Sala family, particularly Charles, who does most of the work now.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I know you know you have your statue kind of on the corner of campus, and you hadn't wanted to talk about it much, but what's your thoughts on a statue at the stadium, or maybe a Dooley Street that goes around the stadium or anything? Would that be another honor that you would like to see? Or?
No, I hadn't even thought about that. I'm proud of the fact that it's there where it is, and it's kind of an entrance to the back end of the stadium. What I like about it is that it fulfilled an area that I debated a long time as an athletic director what to do with it. I was thinking about having more parking spaces, and a lot of things went through my mind. And then when this came along, then they decided to put a garden there. So you've got a nice garden, which is special to me, and then the statue. And what I like about the statue is that it's not just me. It's me with two players, because the players are, again, what it's all about. And that was before they started throwing Gatorade or whatever it is on coaches after a big game. That might have helped me get out of coaching, I think. But I used to be able to hoist the coaches up, you know, after a big celebration. And that's what that signifies.
Do you kind of carve out home football weekends? Are you, I guess, except when maybe your son has a game that you are going to? Do you make that your 6 or 7 Saturdays a year? Are you always there? I know we see you in the press box sometimes.
Yeah, I'm always there. I don't think I've missed a home football game that I know of, except the first year that I was out of coaching. I did some work for ESPN, which was good to get me away, good for me and good for the other coach. But outside of that, I've been to every home football game.
Except what, when Derek was with Tennessee, did you not come to the stadium then for visits?
No, only when we played. I didn't go to those games either, because even when I went up to Knoxville to see him, and play Georgia, but then when I went there, I just stayed in his house, watched it on television. And then when we played here, I did the same thing, because it was kind of a no-win situation.
course, I think you'll agree, Herschel Walker, probably one of the best players. You had many good players, but probably the greatest. I think that's a fair assessment. What was it like to coach Herschel? I mean, was it easy to just say, hey, let's give this guy 40 carries a game?
Easiest job I ever had. Because of the fact, not only was he good, but he was a good leader and an inspiration to the other players, because he would be one of the first ones in every meeting that we had. He always sat in the same place. He was always sitting erect, looking at me. And he would hustle on the field. He was very humble. And he always said that the thing that was most important to him is to please his coaches and to please his teammates. Well, you couldn't get anybody, particularly with a guy with that ability, to say anything better than what he had the ability to say as a youngster. He never said anything 99% of the time. It was just great stuff that you'd almost have to have you'd have to coach somebody for years to be able to respond how he did. So from that standpoint, he was the easiest guy to coach, and you're right, I gave him the ball, and he liked that. In fact, I tell people that during that period of time that I lectured all over the country on all these plays that I put in. And regardless of what the quarterback did, turn left, fake right, as long as he gave the ball to Herschel, it was a heck of a play. So it was all, we had a lot of great plays that I designed during that period of time.
You almost saw Georgia win another national championship in the 2017 season. Obviously, they came so close. Year four for Kirby Smart, you were able to watch him, observe, how he operates, how he runs a program. What are your impressions of how close this program is and just Kirby as the head coach of the Bulldogs?
He's got a chance to do what I don't think any coach has done in recent years except Saban at Alabama. And that is to compete on a yearly basis at the highest level, year after year. And it's hard to do. And the way you do it is that you're able to compete recruiting at the highest level. And he has gotten a great start on that, as you know. In 3 years, having recruiting classes of 1, 3, and 4, whatever it is, and even the fourth class, it looks like it's going to be another one of those as well. And only Saban has been able to do that. And if you recruit at that high level where you're in the top 4 or 5 every year, you're going to have a chance to participate and play in the top 4 or 5. So he's got the best chance. He is a recruiting fanatic. It's every thought that he has is recruiting is behind that thought and how it's going to affect him as to making a decision. And then he is a heck of a good coach. He absolutely is very demanding. He's got a lot of fire about him and enthusiasm, and the record speaks for itself.
Well, obviously he was a great player here in the mid-90s for Georgia when you were athletic director, and I guess over the golf Don and transition. Did either one of them ever talk about Kirby at that time and think, you know, say that he'd be a great coach? Did you ever get an idea, you know, when Kirby played here that he might become a good coach?
Well, if you think about his background, the very fact that he was a good student, and he reminded me that he came over to my house on a couple of times, because in the spring I'd always have the good student athletes, not just in football but all sports when I was AD, to come by, and he would be one of them. In fact, Mary Beth, his wife, was also one of them a few years later. I always say she's my favorite three-point shooter. I really liked her as a basketball player. So he did great in marrying her. He got a wonderful family. But he grew up as a coach. His daddy was a coach. And it's kind of in his genes, I guess. And I've watched him because I've watched him as he went to Valdosta State. I watched him being resourceful enough to get his master's degree. Education was important to him. And then I knew him from coaching with Saban, because my son Derek had recommended him to Nick Saban to hire. So they were together at LSU and they were together at Miami. And then when I was also chair of the Frank Broyles coaching or assistant coaching of the year, that I was there when he was voted number one as the assistant coach of the year. And then he was also one of the top five candidates on another occasion. So I've kept up with Kirby a long time.
We talked off the air about some of the former players that might or that you're expecting, I guess, this weekend upcoming. What do you think that's going to be like to be surrounded by all your former Letterman? I guess Herschel Walker said he's planning to come, and then Terry Hogue might as well, I guess. You know, what will this moment be like to be surrounded by the players that you guided?
Well, it'll probably be a little moving experience for me because you think about it, 25 years of coaching, there's a lot of football players. Some little old fellas that that we started out with that played, that didn't, no way they could play today in a line. It had to be running backs or something. Some of them had weighed 205 pounds. Or Steve Greer that I've been around because he's coached, but he was a 205-pound All-American. And that's hard to do in this day and time. So it'll make me go back and reminisce a little bit, and the fact that that you win football games because you have good players dedicated and they play together, and for the most part we did that. We didn't do it as often as I wanted us to do it, but we did it most of the time, and we were respected in that respect. So yeah, it'll probably be a moving experience for me to see them all together and to be a part of this, because they're the ones that were responsible for this happening. And so I'll naturally thank them.
All right. Saturday, it will be a dedication ceremony for the newly named Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium. And we appreciate Coach Vince Dooley joining us, taking time out of his schedule on this big week. Appreciate it, Coach.
Thank you, guys. Enjoyed it.
All right, again, don't forget to shoot us a review at the Apple Podcasts or in the Google Podcasts app. And we appreciate that. Thanks for tuning in twice a week now. This is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. All right, it's time for the over-unders as we head into week two against Murray State and the home opener. Ryan, are you ready?
For the home opener?
No, for the over-under segment.
I'm ready for all of it. And you know what? And the Dooley dedication. It's going to be exciting.
What? Where'd that come from?
We talked about it earlier in the show, if you recall. Remember?
All right, I don't have an over-under. Okay, I'm going to do an over-under for Dooley then, which wasn't planned, but since you brought him up.
Yes.
Over-under on... actually, I don't even know. Is Dooley going to make a speech? Is this going to be like Lou Gehrig at Yankee Stadium?
Well, I hope not.
No, not in that sense, but just like, you know, is he going to say... wait, hey, how about they have like a James Brown impersonator come out and sing like the Dooley Dog stuff?
That'd be good. Maybe he'll lead the Georgia Bulldog chant back and forth. How about that?
That would work. All right, let's go back to the regular schedule over-under. All right, points for Murray State. The number is one. Will it be over-under? I'm going under. I'm predicting a shutout.
Oh, man, that's... that is bold. I'm going to go over. I mean, what's my other option? There's really not much. I mean,
you could also go under.
Nope, not going under. I think 3-10. You know, a lot of young guys will play, and I think Murray State might break off.
Vanderbilt, an SEC team, only had six points.
I know that, but I'm going to have to go over. I'm going to go over.
All right. Second half snaps for Jake Fromm. The number, again, is one, I am going under. I think he's done before
second half?
Before the halftime.
No, he plays a little bit in the third.
If it's like 48-0, he's not playing anymore.
I think he's trying. Yeah, he will. I think he'll play a little bit more. He'll come out some in the second half. That seems to be, I've noticed this in the past, like last year, even with Justin Fields behind him, didn't he? He would come out in the second half of blowouts.
All right, we'll see.
All right.
All right, carries for DeAndre Swift. The number is six. He had, 16?
16.
Yeah. I am going again with the under. Oh. Well, I think it might be six. What would that be, a push?
Yeah. No, I say it goes over. I mean, I think they want to highlight him a little bit. You know, he had a
highlight him against Murray State.
Yeah, baby. Got to put up numbers.
There's going to be a highlight. 5 for 130 yeah. yards.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If he has that many, I guess it'll depend on yards. If he has like what 5 for 42, I think he gets a few more carries.
Catches for Dominique Blaylock, who did not play in the opener. Kirby said he's been awesome and should have maybe got him in the game and will this time, number one, because it's Murray State. Number two, Kyrus Jackson's out for 3 or 4 weeks with a broken hand. The number of catches is 1. Again, another 1 in the over-under. I am saying over. He's going to have 2 catches.
That's a tough number. You might need to add a hook on that so we can go 1.5. I don't know. I mean, you think back to Pickens last week. They tried to target him a couple times. He never had a catch. So
I think Blaylock, though, more of a shorter like route he'd run necessarily. You know, Pickens was going into the end zone a lot. So
yeah, I guess you're right. I still go under. I mean, it's I think back to first game ever get in, we'll go under.
All right, passing yards for backup quarterback Stetson Bennett. The number is 50. Hmm. Remember, like if he comes in and it's a blowout, they don't necessarily want to just toss the ball around. But guess what? They will. I'm saying Stetson Bennett is going over, and I'm saying he could have like 85 yards passing.
I like your thought on that. I feel like you bring Stetson in to get work, not just to hand the ball off.
Exactly.
So, yeah, there you go. And little slants, little out routes. I don't think they're going to be shooting Hail Marys down the field or anything. What if he connects with Don Blaylock for his one catch for 52 yards? Then we could have all these bases covered.
All right, the number of fans left in the stands midway through the fourth quarter. It's a 92,000-seat stadium. The number is 35,000, and I'm going to say over. There'll be 38,000.
I'll go under.
Oh. You know what? You might win that because it's going to be freaking hot out there, and people want to go home, get into some air conditioning, go get a bite to eat, maybe have another couple of drinks or three.
Are you going to count each one individually so we can settle this?
No, I'm going to count on the listeners out there to take a good picture, and then someone can break it down.
There we go.
The crowd estimate. Isn't crowd estimate kind of a big deal these days? So we'll see how that works out. All right, it's time now for our picks. And as I said, Arthur Lynch is going to do this in the paper for us. He actually sent me picks, well, that are going to run the paper. I'm not going to pull them up now because right now we're just going to go over my picks and Ryan's picks. And Ryan's pulling them up, I think, on his
correct, his
smartphone.
Can't remember exactly everyone that I picked. So let me pull them up really fast.
All right, I don't want to keep the good listeners out there from having to wait for you to pull up.
Got them.
Syracuse at Maryland. This is, this is an ACC Big Ten matchup, which is weird because like 10 years ago, those guys weren't. Was Syracuse in the ACC for 10 years yet? I don't think so.
What were they? They were Big East in the past?
No, because I remember Jim Boeheim was bitching about having to go play ACC tournament in Greensboro.
Yeah.
Like, because he was used to going to the Garden in New York.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. All right. Maryland just crushed Howard in week one, and I don't even. What was the
79?
What was the Syracuse?
They barely got past Liberty with it was like 15, 16 points.
Oh, that's right. It was 24-0.
Okay.
Yeah.
Over the Fighting Freezes.
Yeah. All right. Look, I'm taking Syracuse. I don't think Maryland. I mean, when you score like nearly 80 points, you might have a false sense of security. And Syracuse is not Howard, so give me Syracuse in College Park
over your alma mater. Yeah, I'll take Syracuse as well.
All right, South Florida is at Georgia Tech. South Florida coming off
walloped.
Yeah, they got crushed by
Wisconsin.
Yes, Georgia Tech coming off a game at Clemson. And, look, don't get me started on the Waffle House stuff with Georgia Tech, but I think Tech's going to get the first win under their new coach at Bobby Dodd, so give me Georgia Tech.
Took Tech as well.
Nebraska, Colorado, Mel Tucker coming off a win over the Mike Bobo Colorado State team in week one. Nebraska, who's kind of been a darling of the top 25, although I don't have him on my ballot. And they had I think it was a sloppy win in week one. Give me Nebraska going to Boulder and getting the win there.
Win with Nebraska as well. A lot of hype, like you had said, around I guess Scott Frost in his second year. So I'll take Nebraska and over the tuckered Colorados.
San Diego State at UCLA. UCLA went to Cincinnati and did not look good. I'm not really feeling Chip Kelly going to be the coach at UCLA when that Georgia series begins in 2025, is it, or 2024? I don't know. One of those two
years. That's way down the line, yeah.
Give me San Diego State going to Westwood and winning.
No, I'll take UCLA. I mean, they had a, I mean, fairly tough opponent with Cincinnati on the road to open up. I'll take them at home over San Diego State.
All right, BYU at Tennessee. There's been some national voices talking about Jeremy Pruitt's buyout after that week one embarrassment to Georgia State. I think Tennessee is going to right the ship, so to speak, although didn't they have a ship that sank over there in the waters?
Yeah, it caught fire, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, did it sink after coffee? Yeah. I think Tennessee comes back and pulls the win at home. If they don't, look out. It's going to be even more ugly in Knoxville, so I'll take the Vols.
Yeah, I take them with a rebound, you know, motivation from the embarrassment and all. Give me the Vols.
Arkansas at Ole Miss. Don't ask me why. I'm sticking with the Rebels, even though they did not come through for me at Memphis. I'm just not buying Arkansas in year two on in a road game. So give me Ole Miss.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. That's why I took Ole Miss as well, because it's Arkansas. So, I mean,
Miami at North Carolina. The Hurricanes. You know, people were kind of high on them after they gave Florida a game in a sloppy game in that first game of the season on the Saturday. Right. Was that the first game? It was the first weekend, I guess.
Week zero,
I guess it was. Mac Brown dancing after beating South Carolina, which is dealing with losing Jake Bentley for several weeks, maybe, like, you know, for
I saw 6 weeks, I think.
Yeah. I'm taking the Tar Heels back in beautiful Chapel Hill. So, North Carolina, I'm taking.
Give me Miami.
All right. Minnesota is at Fresno State. That's a natural rivalry. Those fan bases usually vacation together. I don't really know much. I'm going with Fresno because they're at home.
Yeah.
And
I think that was my thinking, too. In Minnesota, they struggled with, can you name it, in that Thursday game? I can't remember. But they struggled with a much lesser opponent. I remember. Maybe South Dakota State. Does that sound right? Yeah.
Vanderbilt is at Purdue, and I'm not with Vandy. I was very disappointed. You know, I expect a lot more from that offense. They've had a big drop off at quarterback. Purdue's going to be. I think they had a road game maybe week one. Was it a road week? Yeah,
that sounds right. Yeah, on the West Coast, if I'm not mistaken.
Give me the Boilermakers in lovely Indiana.
Remember, Vanderbilt played the number three team on the in the country. So
they did, but I still expected more out of their quarterback.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Vanderbilt.
All right, West Virginia is at Missouri, and I believe Missouri is a favorite in this game. Missouri had to go to Wyoming in week one, which is a strange game for an SEC team to be playing. I'm going to take Missouri back at home. Derek Dooley will be there and not here for the naming for his father at the Sanford Stadium. I'm going to take the Tigers.
Took Missouri as well, and I think a lot of that was because West Virginia did not look good in their season opener either. So give me the SEC on that one.
Texas A&M at Clemson in a big game in Death Valley. You know, this could be a huge game for Jimbo Fisher if they can pull this one out. I don't see it happening, although Clemson's quarterback week one wasn't really everything that we thought he would be, but certainly they ran the ball well, and I just think that's an Aggies have a hell of a schedule. They got to come to Georgia as well later.
I will say there needs to be a lot of Georgia eyeballs on this game, I would imagine, because you definitely know you're playing A&M, and possibility of playing Clemson down the lines there, too. So,
all right, and the final game that we're going to pick a score on.
Oh, I took
on,
Clemson, too, by the way.
LSU is at Texas. I've been on the Longhorns since I was impressed with the Sugar Bowl showing, even though Georgia really wouldn't. Ryan just, you can't see it, but he just rolled his eyes at me.
Yeah.
these are the two teams that dealt Georgia the losses last year, in case you forgot. But I'm going to, until Texas proves me wrong, I'm sticking with them. I'm a Sam Ellinger guy. Bevo.
Mark ran for his life from Bevo, as several of us did, actually.
Yeah, there's video evidence of that. I wouldn't say I ran for my life. I think I walked briskly. As I felt like kind of, you know, the guys that go to Pamplona and, you know, want to show their machismo.
Yeah.
Look, I'd be up for that. If you guys want to send me to there, you want to start one of those campaigns online, GoFundMe.
We got to go fund ourselves to Maui if we're going to do anything to go to.
Oh, yeah. I was going to talk to you about that. Yeah. All right. I'm taking Texas 31-30. What time is that game? Is that 8 o'clock? I want to go home and watch that game.
Is that the 7:37 game?
Oh, okay.
I had to put it in the paper. I went LSU 28-27. Tight one.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to mention. I thought I had it on the thing. I was going to congratulate our winner.
The Wiser Than Wiser contest.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that is correct.
All right. He's from Watkinsville.
That is correct.
And you tweeted it out, didn't you?
I did. Sorry, we have a lot of names running through our heads at the moment with football players. And
I'm going to pull it up because I want to give him. I'm going to give him his props. So bear with me here.
And I do believe Mark Weiser. You know what he won?
Here you go, Mike McCurley of Watkinsville.
You know what he won?
You'll $100 gift pack. Is that right?
4 tickets to this weekend's game.
Oh, just that?
It might be more.
I mean, not just that. It's worth more than 100. But
yeah, exactly. So it was a very good week for Mike McCurley.
Are we gonna have Notre Dame tickets to give out this?
Let's not get ahead of it. Let's not get too big for our britches around here.
All right, we'll be back next week, and hope everyone enjoys the home opener. Be safe out there. And
find us Bulldogs Extra podcast, by the way.
Yeah, well,
Apple.
If they're listening,
correct.
They've already found
well,
it.
They might be listening through our website.
Oh, yeah,
you can
point.
Also find it on Apple.
Yeah, well, Apple Podcast. Whatever way you're listening, thanks for checking in here with the Bulldogs Extra Podcast from the Athens Banner-Herald. And, hey, why don't you drop us a line? I'm at mweiser@onlineathens.com. Ryan is at rdennis@onlineathens.com. And the Bulldogs Extra Podcast is presented each week by Zaxby's. Cure your cravings. Stop in today or visit zaxbys.com.